Today on the CMP, a fabulous kids book about Julia Child, food art, and more. Here we go.
You're listening to the Creative Mom Podcast.
www.creativemompodcast.com.
Mom, what are you making?
I'm making.
Mom,
what's my Legos?
Mom, let's paint something.
To help me.
All I really wanted was a bit of peace and quiet, but wasn't gonna happen that way.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Creative Mom Podcast. I'm Amy, and this is episode 203. Bon appetit. I always used to laugh at people who talk about the weather in correspondence. It always felt to me that talking about the weather was somehow the weather standing in for nothing else to say. It reminded me of my grandparents. And now, more and more, I see the weather creeping into my own exchanges. At some point, it seems subtle, but weather becomes a topic. And I had to laugh when I pulled up today's show, the notes that I had started, because when I started jotting down these notes, the weather was different, dramatically different, diametrically different. But I got a summer cold before I got that show recorded, and I've been waiting through the week to record, waiting for this cold to let up. And in that time, no big surprise, the weather changed, and it changed considerably. Last weekend, it was hot, very hot, amazingly hot, painstakingly hot. And I was definitely hot when I started taking those notes, and it shows in my notes, it really shows. Relative to where you live, it probably was not all that hot, but here we are not built for heat. Our houses are not built for heat. We don't have air conditioning. It used to be that 95% of the year, we didn't need to worry about it. It was chilly, cool, foggy. We could wear layers. We were always cold. But now, more and more, it is hot. The roof is flat. It bakes in the sun. And we sit inside like we are enveloped in a cocoon of heat. Countless fans blasting. Noisy. The fans are noisy. So when I started these notes, it was hot and noisy. Too hot, really, I thought at the time, to think about food. But the show was leading me towards food. And thinking about food is partly why I started waxing poetic about how hot it was. I keep having to stop and cough. I might not have waited long enough. So this weekend, the cool has returned. The fog, a bit of rain blown south from the storm that passed through the Pacific Northwest this week. The moment of hot that coincided with my notes that day has passed. Such a wonderful reminder of the transience and of the chance involved in what we capture in our notes, journals, and sketchbooks. Just as soon as you can get it written down, something might change. It doesn't change the fact that it happened or that it was. But in the telling, it may no longer be the same. Depending on the weather, food takes on different tones and connotations. Different comfort foods come to mind. You think about food differently. You think about what sounds good differently. Maybe you like hot foods at certain times or cold foods at certain times, or maybe you always want to make or bake something specific, depending on the weather. Food is at the heart of today's show because of the book for kids that I am going to talk about. And food ties in ever so slightly with a homework assignment and a set of drawings requested by a family member that Matthew is doing. So those are two separate things, a homework assignment and this set of drawings that he needs to work on over the next few months. I mentioned recently that he was struggling with a homework assignment on memory. As a creative parent, it is often really fascinating to watch as his own sense of light and composition and theme develops. He's 15. Memory gave him a little bit of pause. I tried to suggest possible avenues of thought, but really, I have to be careful because he's 15. His vantage is very different. His range is different. The scope of what he's going to think about in terms of responding to a prompt, it's different. So I tried to think from his position and come up with some ideas and things we could talk about, and also things that might fit the way he likes to draw. But I was very careful, trying to make sure that the things I suggested weren't more me than they might be him. Something I'm careful about. I want to suggest and nudge and help brainstorm when he wants that, but I realize that his response has to come from him. And ultimately it did. He came up with something totally that I wouldn't have expected, but something that totally was appropriate. What I do love, especially, is his sense of lighting and composition. It continues to sharpen, but he has a real intuitive grasp. And he has such a clear love of strong black and white, strong shadows, beautiful balance of light. For several of these homework assignments since the start of this year, he has come up with his own system and he just does it. So I didn't even realize he was doing it until I saw the outcome of it the first time. So what he does is he takes this small clip-on desk light. It's the only one we have, and it's plugged in my office right now. And he takes that and he takes it into his bedroom, plugs it up. He turns off all the other lights and he works with that clip-on light and a still life composition to take photos with his phone, carefully manipulating light and shadow to snap a series of photos. And then he evaluates those photos. He sits and looks at them on his phone, considers them, and sometimes he goes back and he reshoots, trying different angles or deeper shadows. It's a really interesting process to watch. I should mention that for their homework assignments, they can draw from photos, which they cannot do for their in-class assignments. And homework assignments are 5-hour drawings versus in-class work, which straddles weeks of daily work. So they are different in concept, different in approach. But it's been very interesting. So memory was tough, but memory was nothing compared to the word critique. Critique. That was the word on the board as the new topic when I went to Back to School Night a few weeks ago, and I was really surprised. I honestly thought I must be misunderstanding that little block of info on the board, but indeed, critique is the current homework assignment, or was. It was for last week. What an incredibly hard word to do for a representational artist. There was an anatomy homework assignment in between the night I went to Back to School Night and the due date. So we had 2 weeks to think about it, really. And the critique piece was due last week. And it was a tough piece to think about. Even at my age, I thought that was a super hard word. I would have been pretty frustrated, I think, if that had been my assignment. And it was hard. It was hard for him to think about. You have to think about that word in terms of what you might choose from real things that you can go out and photograph or draw from life. Critique. What would you have drawn? In the end, what he ended up doing is pretty loose in terms of how it fits that word. At my age, I could probably make a pitch for how the drawing demonstrates or embodies critique. And he's got a similar argument in his head, a case he might make if he had to, but he may or may not really have to. His decision was driven a little bit by some thinking that he had been doing for the series of family drawings that he really needs to get underway. I'm going to wait and see how the set develops, if that really turns out to be the first piece in the set before I talk more about them. But ironically, with this drawing that he did for Critique, he landed surprisingly in my own interest area for theme. It's very interesting to see the things that he likes to draw and that really catch his attention. Doing the first of those pieces as a school piece has me worried just a little bit, but I was excited to see how it shaped up. It turned out just absolutely beautiful. As he got ready to start on it, and we kept talking about it, talking about the series, really, before I thought that this was going to be Critique, I added a box of wafer cookies to my grocery list. Because for some reason, those little wafer cookies were in my head while he and I were talking about the composition and what objects he might use in this family series. We've had some good conversations talking about how you could use this or that, or change the position of that, or have that on the side, or use different elements, different vantage, and how those decisions and those changes and slightly different compositions might play out in a series. In the end, I didn't buy the wafer cookies. I stood in the grocery and I looked at the only wafer ones they had. I was really underwhelmed. I just wasn't sure it would be right for the composition, wasn't sure that he would like them. He didn't even know what I was talking about. I'm not sure he's ever had them or seen them. And I'm stupidly in such a hole budget-wise that I couldn't just buy a whole bunch of different kinds of cookies. That sounds sad to say, but it's really true. So I was really trying to justify what I was doing and trying to do something that I thought would really help him and that he would like. And so I didn't buy wafers. I bought something else. I bought something else based on the shape of the cookie, based on the color that I knew it would bring into the composition, which he's going to render in black and white, I know. And I just thought he might like it. It also had a bit of a pattern. I thought he might want to do that or he might not. So I brought him home. And he used one. So this first piece has one of these cookies in it. And like I said, the first piece turned out really amazing. I definitely want to talk more about the series, but I want to see what's going to happen with it, how it's going to shape up. So this really is just a teaser mentioned today, partly because of the cookie. Of all the suggestions for Critique that I came up with as he and I tossed around ideas, my personal favorite, which he didn't do, my personal favorite and one that I really thought he might latch onto, sounds a little bit silly, but I don't think it's really silly at all. But it was to do a crumpled up chocolate bar wrapper with a few crumbs. A very clear Critique, I think, right? It might be subtitled, "It Was Good," for those that need help with interpretation. He's got a fondness, pretty extreme, for basic Hershey's chocolate bars. And so that crumpled up wrapper concept made a lot of sense to me. It seemed right. On a plane a year ago on the way to my mom's, he stayed awake most of the red-eye flight and drew his Diet Coke can and a crumpled napkin, I think. I think that's what it was. And it was really a cool drawing. And that was in my head when I thought about that chocolate bar wrapper idea. Whereas I might do a 10-minute sketch of that wrapper in ink and it would, you know, be a wrapper. What he would do in 5 hours would be mind-blowing, I know. I saw a video last week of someone who turns the shadows cast by a crumpled napkin into faces, just one right after another, crumples the napkin, drops it down, and based on the shadow of it, draws a face, and then repeats it over and over and over in this video. It's really interesting what people discover they can do in terms of finding shapes and what they latch onto in terms of what they like to do. In talking about the wafer, or the cookie, scones kept coming to mind for me. Partly it's the weather, and one particular pedophore definitely came to mind, a wedding cake pedophore from the tea shop, which the idea of that pedophore is mouthwatering for me in this moment. And, of course, my mind willingly will latch on to the idea of a scone. I think back to the days of the daily scone and butterscotch chips in my own scones, and I used to make lots of muffins. Oh, it's a slippery slope. Definitely a slippery slope in my head. I have been low carb for enough months now that it isn't going to happen. I'm not going to have either of those things. But talking about food art and pastry drawings, seriously, was mentally yum.
I am the art. The art is me.
I have a book for you and your listeners and readers today. And this book, as I said, is the reason for this being even remotely a food show. It didn't have to be, but it is. This book is called Bon Appetit, The Delicious Life of Julia Child by Jesse Hartland. I loved this. Just loved it. Absolutely loved it. And I'm going to tell you to go out and get this book. And looking at it makes me really want to go and watch Julie and Julia again, or better yet, read it. I have never read it, but I did watch it at some point, and I think I need to watch it again. I went and checked last night. It's not on Netflix, so I'll have to find another way. But definitely you're going to want to get this book, and it's probably going to make you want to watch that movie again, or read the book, as I said. This book is a graphic novel of sorts about Julia Child, and it is absolutely charming. The front page sets the stage with a quirky, full-body painting of Julia Child on a deep teal background. White handwritten text that fills in the space tells us, quote, "She bubbled over with effervescence, spoke as if she had marbles in her mouth, and gleefully hammed it up in front of the camera. She joined a spy mission during World War II, and later moved to Paris and learned to cook. She wrote a classic French cookbook that still sells oodles of copies. She created and starred in a pioneering TV show loved by millions. How did a gangly girl from Pasadena do it? This is her story." End quote. I love the visual approach to this book. I really do. In the same way that I love Myra Kalman's style, which has such a quirky feel to it to me, this book strikes me similarly in terms of its illustration. It's a true combination of illustration and text, all scattered on the page, but organized in a way that our brains follow, very much like we would interpret comic panels, but without necessarily any overt gridding. So these pages are chock full of information, of illustration, lots and lots of it, and of story that's told sequentially. Hartland's illustrative style is really loose. It's really whimsical. The book is hand-lettered in style, which I love. Starting from the very beginning, the book covers Julia Child as a kid in Pasadena, a tomboy with very large feet, growing up in a house with a cook and a mom who only prepares meals on the cook's day off and can only make three dishes: biscuits, codfish balls, and Welsh rabbit. And for those who might read that and have no idea what Welsh rabbit is, the book explains a little aside that says what it is and reassures the reader that it is not really what it sounds like. And I liked that style. I liked that kind of tidbit, the way that's interspersed, the way that's handled. The book does that consistently and really effectively. All on one page, readers get a funny foreshadowing with a mention of a disastrous semester of French in high school, follow her through college at Smith, and learn that she's a bit of a prankster. In page after page of tidbits about her life, we follow what happens after school and then during World War II, where she meets Paul Child, After the war, they marry, and when Paul takes a job in France, they move. There's a lot of movement in her life. They move back and forth into different places, and there's definitely this feeling of movement. She spends 4 years learning French that first time, which goes back to the trouble in high school. And she struggles to find her calling. Really interesting to read that. I loved so much the style of the telling of the story. The structure on each page varies. Lots of blocks of sequencing, great colors, use of text. We see Julia Child at cooking school, where she learns sauces and soups and main courses and desserts. And immediately after that, we get a 2-page spread where she fixes a fancy meal for her sister and she makes a galantine. And in 32 individual illustrated and captioned painted boxes, we learn exactly how to make a galantine. So there's a lot of variety in the telling of this story. The pacing is great. It's not really steady. Some pages are full of all this information in this really dense illustration, and some pages are handled much differently. So there's a lot of variety, which makes it really interesting to read. We watch her friendship with a few other women develop, and a cooking school emerges, and then a cookbook is in process, and Julia Child steps in with some new ideas, and they start reworking this thing that turns into a multi-year mammoth book project. The depiction of this process and the women's conversations is really fascinating, and the initial 800-page book is rejected. Too long, not enough shortcuts. Her process in recipe creation is really interesting, and it's a fascinating detail in the book. A page on her working on fish recipes shows her trying bunches of recipes and tweaks and fine-tuning. Her revised version of the cookbook is 750 pages and still not accepted. Ultimately, we get the story of mastering the art of French cooking, the book released in 1961 that everyone now associates with Julia Child. It's an interesting look at the publishing industry, the process, the tenacity, the time, the passion, the determination, the cycles of testing and writing and redoing. A book that took 10 years. And then comes the TV show. There's a crepe recipe on the last page for kids with their families to try. If your household does carbs, of course. So I loved it. I loved this book. It's definitely a book I would have. I would tell you, check it out, see what you think, but I think this is a great book. If you have anyone in your house that loves to cook or is interested in cooking and is a fan of this kind of illustrated story, it's fantastic. It's also quite dense. So while it's a fine read aloud for young listeners, it's got plenty of substance to it for independent readers and older listeners as well. Also, there is a great mix of detail, like I said, and lots of travel, lots of interesting foods mentioned. Check it out. And after you do, you might be really excited all anew about food drawings. Food might start sounding really good. You might want to draw what's on your plate, which of course Danny Gregory always recommends. You might get into recipe illustration again, or give it another thought, or give it a try. And I'll remind you that there is the wonderful They Draw and Cook website, www.theydrawandcook.com. And they have more than one book. Of course, you definitely want to reacquaint yourself there and discover this genre anew. When I went to grab that URL for the show, it's amazing how much that site has grown. There was a fabulous chocolate cake illustration on the main page by Suzanne Denai, and a super dog treats recipe by Bridget Stallman. Very interesting. You could browse for a very long time on that site, and it's just expanded so much since the last time I was there. There are even illustrators for hire showcasing their work. It's a beautiful community that developed around food illustration. And that leads me nicely and predictably into a very short prompt for today. If you're looking for a prompt and you're at all inspired to go get something fun to eat after this, I suggest you illustrate a recipe. Think about the steps it takes to make something that you make often, and record those steps in some illustrated way in your journal, and then share it. It can be as complicated or as simple as you like. If you're really stuck on how to start, draw a series of boxes on a page and then see what happens. It's a tough genre. It's a tough genre. But if you've never tried it, you should. And that is it for today, everyone. I'm going to keep it really short. The weekend has passed quickly. I thought I might record another one that I had ready. But like I said, I was trying to wait until I was sure I wouldn't cough my way through the show. But I wanted to pop in and say hi, and I wanted to tell you about this book because I've had it sitting here forever, and I really do love it. And if I don't tell you about critique, then we'll be on to the next one, and the next one will probably be interesting as well. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with the series. We'll see what happens with cookies and wafers and that memory of a perfect pedophore and scones. As always, you can reach me at creativemompodcast@gmail.com. Show notes will be available at creativemompodcast.com. You can find me at Instagram at oamyoamy, on the Facebook page for the Creative Mom Podcast, or in the Creativity Matters group, where we are casually sharing the kind of work we're doing and developing a small community there of like-minded individuals. We're just working on being creative day to day. Until next time, be a mom, be a creative mom. And don't forget that creativity matters. And of course, don't forget to breathe. We are quickly coming upon November, people. All right, have a great week, everyone.
I made this.